Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with theater's biggest names. I'm your host, Alan Seals, and this episode is with Montego Glover, who, my gosh, I have never met her before this interview, but she just radiates kindness. We had this wonderful, wonderful recording session. And during quarantine, I've been using a platform that allows my guests and I to see each other while we're recording this nice multi-track audio. And it's nice to be able to just look into people's faces, their eyes, look at their faces, and feel more of them than you would with just hearing somebody's voice. And I just loved watching her talk. She just, like I said, radiates this positive energy that makes you just want to lean in and listen. Her story is really a fun one. One phone call changed the course of her entire life. It was an alum from her college that just said, "Hey, I know you just moved to the city, but come audition for this role." It was her first audition. She got the job, and the rest is history, as you'll hear in the episode. She's very outspoken about being open to everything. She's really introspective and prepares herself emotionally for her next step, whatever that may be, and make sure she's ready to accept new opportunities as they come. She explains it way better than I just did, so please listen to the episode. It's a wonderful one. Find me on Instagram and Twitter at @theater_podcast. Please show your support. I want to keep the transcriptions of these episodes going, so every little bit helps. Show your support at ttp.fm/Patreon, Patreon. Find me on Facebook. Leave a rating, leave a review. And now, everybody, please enjoy this episode with Montego Glover. Today's Tony Award nominated and two-time Drama Desk Award winner made her Broadway debut in the original production of The Color Purple before creating the role of Felicia Farrell in the Broadway hit musical Memphis. She has starred in all the Natalie Portmans, a new musical comedy called It Should Have Been You, and the 2016 Broadway revival of Les Mis as Fantine. She is also an accomplished TV, film, and commercial actor in addition to lending her voice to various projects such as Dora the Explorer, some Audible originals, and video games, which is a little close to my heart. Most recently, she completed a thrilling run as Angelica Schuyler in the Chicago company of Hamilton, and we will soon be seeing her on an upcoming new Netflix show called Inventing Anna. Montego Glover, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here. Hi, Alan.
And we are obviously recording in quarantine. Where are you joining us from today?
Brooklyn.
Are you down in Brooklyn? Me too.
Yay! Holding it down, right? We're holding right. It down.
Yeah, I never know these days who's left. Like, actor friends are just like fleeing the city in droves. I have some people who even owned property and they have either rented it out or just straight up sold it. And like, let's go back to Ohio because there's no Broadway for a while.
Right? It's sort of a dual reality, but is it? You know what I mean? Like, it's our lives as actors and, you know, the highs and lows that come with it, obviously, even pre-pandemic. But this has, like, changed the game for a lot of people in a number of ways. Dare I say all of us, actually, if I'm being honest.
Well, absolutely. I mean, aside from just not having a stage or not being able to be with people, you know, auditions are almost non-existent. And now, I mean, we're recording this in the middle of August. And it's taken a good, 6 months of quarantine here. But now, you know, I have friends who are doing a lot more voiceover work and they have kits at home and they've built studios in their closets. I was on camera with James Iglehart yesterday and he was literally in his closet with like sound panels all around and everything, right? So that's what you got to do. But you've done VO work, obviously, as I just rattled off in your bio, very impressive bio. But what are you doing to stay busy and like not go completely insane like I am, working out of this single room for months and months and months?
Right. I totally get it. You know, like it's two things. It's, you know, how am I staying sane in life? Just, you know, relieving my stress and, you know, getting some air and staying caught up on what's going on in the world so that you're informed, but not, you know, so overloaded that you're truly overwhelmed every day in a way that works against you, can't handle. And then like, what's work doing? What's popping at work? And then, you know, what's checking on the family and friends and chosen family. So for me, it's sort of a three-pronged, multifaceted area. For work, honestly, for me, the transition has been from things that would normally happen on stage or things that would normally happen in a live space and or venue have just moved online to a degree. So, you know, I presented a number of plays, both privately and reading for playwrights and other creatives with a cast. I've done it publicly. I've done it to fundraise. I've done it to raise awareness. Like, I've been able to use that skill and frankly, that joy, that gift around it to continue to work and present, but also exercise and see people and, you know, keep my hands on a bit of art. So that's been great. In the world, obviously, of voiceover, I was telling someone the other day, I said, you know, normally when I'm, you know, coming and going on the stage and other venues and concert work and all that other jazz, you know, my voiceover universe operates easily daily at about 125, 150%. Like there's never a dull second. There's always something that should and needs to be done that I'm being seen for, which is wonderful. We went into quarantine and along with all of the live performance, all of the VO upped by 300%. So wow. I have been in my home studio, a closet converted to a very sensible ISO booth, talking. And it's great. It's work I love to do. It's work I've always done. And now with quarantine, what has happened is just, you know, taking it up. It's leveled up crazy, you know, in a beautiful way. I mean, I have no complaints, but it does require a bit of management. Speaking of which, staying sane, like really with yourself. There's a lot going on, you know, the top of this year from basically March 12th until this very moment. I think that the world is an entirely different place. And so I've really needed to embrace quiet time even more so. I always strive for balance in my life between personal and work and otherwise, but really, really strive for time to be quiet and be still, to really hear my own thoughts. What is my heart saying? How am I really responding? Choosing proper outlets for that. I have a yoga practice, writing in my journal, and doing things that bring me joy that will allow me to stay connected. For example, you know, while we were all in quarantine, I could go to my farmer's market every Saturday. And for me, even pre-pandemic, that was a wonderful treasured experience week to week to go and shop at the market and choose what I, you know, lovingly will eat and enjoy. And so being able to do that and have a sense of normalcy around that and other little pockets of things that allow me to have a sense of normalcy, aside from the fact that I need to be available for family and friends and chosen family to check in on me, because that gives other people in your life who love you a sense of stability and being able to reach out and check on other people and be there for them. What I found in quarantine is that if I'm treating my own spirit, my heart, my body as well as I can, I am much more present and able, even in these extraordinarily trying circumstances. I'm as able to show up for other people and show up for my career and show up for myself, you know?
Yeah, that you said chosen family a couple times, and that's the concept, not a concept. I mean, I'm obviously known about the concept, but I've something that I've heard so many people say recently, especially in the same context that you provided it in that it's something that we have to do to keep ourselves sane because like, I love my wife, I love my kids, but I just need to go outside, you know?
I do need to go outside.
So, you know, they're like, FaceTime has become so much more important. And I'm just like texting friends and I say, you know, when can we play? When can we get online and just talk or play like stupid games or whatever it is? And I get it. And then, I mean, as someone who is on the stage, I'm sure you can relate. But for me, as someone who watches people on stage, missing the arts, missing that outpouring of emotion 8 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, that's catharsis for so many people on stage, right? And it's catharsis for people watching it.
Yeah.
And so you are so fortunate to be able to have all of that in your little ISO booth. Because a lot of people don't have that.
They don't have it in their little ISO booth. Or opportunities to really do some good in the world and also, you know, keep your hands, you know, in art. For example, I presented a Noel Coward play twice, actually, for Stars in the House, which was just so wonderful to have that work, to be in the company of those other actors, most of whom are my friends, for us to be connected in that way and just spend that time reading a great work and enjoying it. And most importantly, having as live a communion as we could, given our circumstances. You know, one of the things I love about the theater is that we're all in the room together, like physically breathing. I can hear every person in that 1500 seat house or whatever. I can hear you breathing. I can feel you moving, you know what I mean? Emotionally, spiritually, like kinetically. And so that's the part that you have to keep reaching for. You have to keep really paying attention to, because I feel like in this circumstance, it's easy to get a little withdrawn. So reaching out and continuing to put your hands and your light on those seeds is really important. It takes effort.
The vocabulary you use is very, it's interesting to me in that, you know, you say like you've used energy and put your light out there and you feel people, and it's very cerebral. It's a very cerebral way of existing. And you were talking about, you know, you want to love yourself at the beginning and you write in your journal and self-care and all this. Is this something that, I guess, the energy that you feel between people and the energy that you feel between your family and your chosen family, is this something that has always come naturally for you that you're aware of, or have you had to work on it over time? And like, is that what's made you so successful in your career, is because you can connect to these people in a nonverbal way?
Yeah. Oh, that's good of you to say. That's really kind of you. Thank you. I would say, I think that the seed has always been there. I was raised with those values, the importance of community, the importance of communication and family, and listening more than you talk. Because as a kid, particularly where I grew up, I mean, I'm born and raised in the South, you know, you didn't, if grown folks were talking, then if you were a kid, you were not talking. You were not encouraged to participate in conversation. So it's a great skill, actually, though. You learn how to be in a room and just observe and just hear what's going on, rather than feeling the need to, you know, to enter the space otherwise. And I think that's been helpful as an actress. You know, when I'm scoring a scene or a play or a piece of music, and I'm looking for the life of this woman, this person that I'm going to play, I'm sitting in the quote unquote room with her and listening to her tell me where she is and what the world is, where she lives and how she exists. That's part of the process. So yes, I think being growing up and being raised around a particular set of values has helped me transition fairly well. There's a level of adaptability I think you need in the modern age that we have to really grasp. It's not always the best decision to dig in your heels. And sometimes the exact thing you need to do is stand firm, stand tall, and hold the line. Do you know what I mean? So there's a balance between those, and knowing when to use and when not. I think that's important. And I always have. And what I found too, is that as I continue to grow as an artist and grow up as a person, as a woman, as a citizen, those things keep changing in the best way, but they keep growing hopefully in the right direction. Do you know what I mean? Again, the work is not making the same mistake 3 times in a row, 80 times in a row. Gonna make a mistake, make a different mistake.
Or you're gonna absolutely, and learn from it. Right. I mean, that's the point of making mistakes. If you're gonna learn, yeah, you gotta learn from it.
Don't do it like that.
This is unusual for this podcast. Listeners, I know that I normally start off with like, tell me about your childhood. Where were you born? Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the South, and you were born in Macon, Georgia. We're going to get to that. We will, I promise. But we're going down a path that I absolutely love. And you said, again, just a second ago, you said the way you identify is in various different ways. And as you've matured in your life and matured in your career, has how you have identified, like the primary adjective through which you have identified, has that changed over time?
I think ultimately, no. What I have discovered is that there are so many more colors, doors, facets, avenues. It's not just one one-dimensional or even three-dimensional thing. It's my sense of wanting to relate and participate and commune with people has always been there. It's why I think, you know, in school I ran track, you know, I like team sports, or, you know, why I have siblings instead of being an only or something. Do you know what I mean? I've just always been in a space. My parents both come from large families, you know? So I have a sense of like these large extended families and large sense of like fabric and community in that way. And I think that has always been in there. And I have discovered along the way that it's translatable. So when I get a play in my hands, I'm thinking, what is the world of this play? How big and wide and tall and deep is it? And how can I serve the piece? How can my, that core in me that's like, what can you contribute to the community, to the world, to the telling of the story? What can you do? And how many tools do you have in your bag, your tool bag, to help you get there?
That's so cool. I mean, so... I was thinking about myself here at the same time, and like, you know, there's the big ones. There's man, there's white, there's father, there's employee, there is podcaster. Like, I guess, you know, podcaster, that one's grown recently in the last year and a half. But yeah, it's, I love how you called it a toolbox, because depending on what role you're in, what environment you are creating, you got to pull that out.
Yeah. You do. And you need to know what you're looking for. You need to know what's not in there. And that's a discovery. You know, there've been times I've reached into my toolbox and I'm like, I need a hammer. I don't have a hammer. Now, you should get about getting a hammer. You should do that, you know, or when you are inspired. I mean, I'm sure you have these moments where you're like, I have an idea, you know, and I'm going to get to work making it happen. You know, I think a sign of maturity around that, for example, is I have an idea. I'm going to get to making it happen. And now I'm going to give myself a process. I'm going to give myself time and space and energy, whatever that is for me, because everyone's different, of course. You know, what is, you know, work on the piece and go out of town and, you know, get those reviews for one person is like, nope, fast track straight to Broadway for somebody else.
Right.
So recognizing what your process is, I think, is important. And another thing that I've been very, very grateful for in terms of experience, training, and life experience aside from work is having the time to really work out what my process is and continue to grow, both as a person and an artist. You know, what's your process?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I absolutely love how you describe this. And it's just becoming a better person. I mean, I think every show, like the arts heals, the arts can save, the arts is a necessary thing in all of our lives, whether we realize it or not. And it's kind of funny because, you know, there's the whole thing about like, especially in the state of, or the city of New York, or, you know, there's Cuomo who's not helping actors, but then Broadway brings in over $1 billion a year in tourism. And it's, you know, people come to this for a reason. Obviously, like, art heals, art can save. We need this in our lives. And people come to Broadway, they see shows, they put on shows in big productions or small houses. Community theater happens everywhere. And I mean, even at the most fundamental level, your kids role play. They want to be somebody else. They want to have fun. They want to explore outside themselves. And I think to a show like Jagged Little Pill, where... on the outside, it's just, oh, look, an Alanis Morissette musical. But it's not. Yeah. It's a show about rape and addiction and white privilege. And it's so, so deep. Yeah. So you have somebody like Elizabeth Stanley who has to go to a place every single night that I don't know if anybody could get come back from once.
And here we are.
And here she is going there eight nights a week. Yeah. And like Catherine Gallagher is the one who gets assaulted in the show. And they all, as a cast, had to do a research project. You know, the director went in and said, like, you need to present on something. You need to go, and this is your assignment. This is your homework. This is your homework. Yeah. You said, you know, you reached for a hammer once and it wasn't there. is this, like, do you have equivalent experiences where you've been presented with a script or a role and you're like, this is something brand new. I gotta start from the beginning. Like, what is your process with that?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Funny you asked that question, because the absolute answer, and it's like recent, is all the Natalie Portmans. A new play that I was working on, presented by MCC, new play. C.A. Johnson is the playwright. Absolutely terrific piece. Just beautiful. Small, you know, 5-6 actors. And this woman that I played, a mother, an alcoholic, and a widow, and trying, mother of two. She has a 16 and a 17 or 15 and 17 year old. And, you know, they are living at the edge. You know, she cleans in hotel. She's a maid in a hotel, you know, and it's her, the darkness in her depths was so immense and so all consuming. I have never played a woman who had so much darkness in her. I play people who have, who feel a lot, who have heavy and long emotional wells. All of this is true for this character, but there was a mean, nasty coming from a place that is so primal and grassroots about this woman that I had to really say, this is a learning process. This is like a teaching moment for you. You're about to stretch as far as you're able to happen inside this woman every night. And talk about having to go to a place 8 times in 6 days. She was definitely one of them. Because there was no faking the funk. There was no imitation version of it. It required that I open the chest doors, the head doors, and just start at a full run and never stop until I was off the cliff.
That's not only emotionally or physically tiring, it's emotionally tiring too. So like, did you have to come home, and how do you recover? How do you become Montego again?
You know, that's a two-pronged answer. One, experience, time and experience. I can assure you, and I've seen this with other young actors and actresses, you know, they are so raw and they're so available. But what they lack is the skill to go to those depths and then get themselves safely back. Because the thing is, you do have to come safely back.
Yeah.
Surface. You have to go there, but you have to go back. So how, again, what is your process? How do you get yourself back to safety, back to the surface? So that's one. And the other for me was recognizing that there, every night, every performance of that play was a different experience, because the same, you know, what, 227 people are not in the audience every night. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a different interaction. And when I talk about, I can hear you, I can feel you moving in space with me, that's what I mean. It's informing my journey in a slightly different way. Even the slightest movement makes a difference, you know? And I do not mean, let me be abundantly clear, I do not mean I am going out on stage to do it for the people and give them a show and do it. That's not what I mean. I mean, honest to goodness, like kinetic energy, like honest, real, no pretense. Just live in the life of this person and recognize that a door to your world is open between you and who else is in the world with you. So for me, two pieces, like get yourself safely back. That takes time and experience, and it takes an ability, recognizing that it has to be done. It is not okay for you to stay there once you go off the cliff and crash to the bottom in the very depths. You absolutely must come back.
So what did you do though? Do you shake it off? Do you yoga? Do you read? Like what?
Like in the moment, it's, you know, once I'm done, I need to, if there's something magical, at least for me, that happens once the scene is done, or you exit the space, once your contribution to the scene or to the play has happened in this time frame. When I exit left or right or upstage, whatever, the minute I pass that threshold, the pieces start to fall off in chunks. Like it starts to come off in chunks. And as long as I keep moving, it's like I keep passing through a series of hands or hooks that just keep pulling things off. I don't even have to do it. I just need to be available for those pieces to start to fall away. And then it's rest, because I think honestly, so many times I've had this experience, even as a person taking in a piece of art, you're so emotionally invested and bound up, you forget to breathe, you stop breathing. I've done that in a movie theater, in a play, in a musical. I've done, like, I realize I'm so involved in what's going on stage, I stop breathing. So I have to, as an actor, remember, once I pass the threshold, allow the pieces and chunks to fall off. They have to go. Get light again, because you've been very heavy. Get light again and breathe. You must restore, like, what's that word? That fluid.
Your chi, your zen.
Yeah, you got to restore it because you got more to go. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not done. It's usually not right. The end. It's usually just the end of act one or something. There's more to do. So,
right. You
know, be smart about the athleticism required.
It is. It is athletics. I say it so many times on this podcast that Broadway, off-Broadway, they are the Olympians of theater. You have to maintain it. You have to train. You have to know.
It's a new sport.
Yeah. I love that. And I feel like too, in personal experience too, that it's just like, once you develop who you are, you know, the emotion becomes a bit of muscle memory too.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go to a place and you let yourself go there. You're open to it and you're feeling the energy from your cast or from your audience. And part of that too is your costume, right? Once you develop, you put that on and literally, you know, you said figuratively things are falling off you, but you take that costume off and you're literally taking that back off again.
Sure.
And you hang it up and it gets dry cleaned and, you know.
And back to it, you know what I mean?
Comes back to you the next day.
Listen, there is something that takes place. There's truly something that takes place when you are sitting in your dressing room and your dresser says, it is time, and you're playing Fantine and you need to be laced into that corset to begin what is her journey, you know, which will include at the very end, you know, dying in the streets. Yes, when the corset comes off, you know.
You literally can breathe again when the corset comes off.
Elite sport, kids. Elite sport.
Right. So, okay. So I said it a while ago. Grew up in Macon, Georgia. You were raised in Chattanooga, Tennessee, yeah?
Correct.
Yeah. So you said you're raised in the South. What, I guess, where did you get into the performing? What made you want to start singing and being on stage?
Oh, that's interesting. Let's start here. Where I'm from and in my family, like, music is always around. Like, we went to church every Sunday, and people sang in the choir. My parents did. I did. You know what I mean? Everybody does that. So music is always around. It's very integral, actually, to, like, our lives and to church, which is very integral to the lives, to our lives, like worship and the idea of a kind of spiritual worship. So there's that. I've been singing as long as I can remember, just because it's a function, not for a purpose of, you know, anything more than, you know, sing along with grandma or mom or dad or, you know, auntie or uncle, whatever.
Right.
And the rest is, honestly, I remember, I have very vivid memories of this, sitting in front of the television in Chattanooga, Tennessee, watching public TV and listening and to the orchestra and watching those musicians play and seeing ballets and seeing artists present their art or like the pre-version of like virtual tours through museums or highlights for different artists from different eras, different schools. And I was transported. The storytelling, the different kinds of things that were oral, things that were visual, things that were movement-based and incorporated both. I was enchanted by it. And that never, it woke something up in me and it never, ever, ever went back to sleep. So that was really the beginning. Like I recognized that feeling and I still have it. I recognize that feeling. So when I found a place in school that welcomed it and cultivated it, because we had art in our schools, all kinds. We had choir, and we had bands, and we had all those things, and theater concentration as well. It made sense, you know? It made sense. I was probably 12 when I started studying acting formally, and I remember I was at school. I was walking down the hallway. At the time, I was running track. and, you know, enjoying it, you know, out there doing it. And there was, I was passing by the auditorium and there was a class going on in the auditorium. And I opened the door and it was an acting class, like older students who were working and younger students who were there, who were observing, excuse me. And it was like the experience of the, you know, public broadcasting, you know, moment. And I remember standing there and looking and looking. It was like the instructor like sensed that I was there or someone was there. I'll never forget this. And she turned around and she saw me and I saw her and she said, come in. And I did.
That was it.
And the door shut and I have never looked back. So that's where I would say.
That's funny. You used the vocabulary again, like she sensed you. It's very, 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 I love how you describe these situations. It's very like energy flow. That's my version of spirituality. Yeah. is energy connections between people. And I think there's a very strong scientific reasoning for a lot of stuff, but you know, might not take it as spirituality for now, right?
Yeah. So
then went to FSU. That's Florida right. State.
Mm-hmm.
With a BFA in musical theater, right?
And go Noles.
That's right. That's right. And then, so how long from that before Broadway debut in Color Purple?
From Florida State to Broadway debut, you mean?
Yeah.
Let's see. Florida State, about 5 years.
About That's five, not bad.
No, not bad at all. Not bad at all. You know, I was always fairly driven and focused. I really loved my training in acting, like before college. And then the program itself was excellent for me. It was a full level up. It's exactly what you would want to do if you were like moving through your matriculation, do you know what I mean? And, you know, really seizing your growth levels. It was a great choice for me. I'm very glad I chose Florida State in that way. But what I also knew is that I was very serious about pursuing acting as a career. And I knew that I wanted to move to New York. I also, though, was very serious about it being permanent, and I wanted it to stick. I didn't want to move to New York and run out of money or run out of energy or run out of, like, emotional bandwidth. You know what I mean? I wanted to be spiritually, emotionally, and financially ready to be here. The stakes were that high for me. Because it's not like I made another decision. I wasn't one of those kids that was like, I'm going to major in music theater and minor in chemistry. Because,
right.
Meow, meow. Like, that was not the plan. Because the plan was, I love this very much. It's the only most thing. So I took the time to do it. And it was great. It gave me, having those things in place, and every young person in that space is different. But those three pillars in place for me gave me a foundation and a sense of self and groundedness and really authority so that when I arrived in New York, I could make decisions that felt right. And I wasn't in a bind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people I know come up and they have a few months of savings. They're like number one in their school or number one, wherever they are. And they come here and they just get trounced on.
It's so hard.
You got to come here with humility. You have to come here. Realizing that you're not going to be the best right away.
No.
No matter what.
It's a gift if you're still on your feet. It's a gift if you, you know, take the A train and you want to go to Midtown and you don't end up in Harlem this time. Like, you know, together. Do you know what I mean? Like, take the time to really get your bearings, get yourself set, you know, coming from a different environment. You know, Florida State's in Tallahassee, which is North Florida. It's very different layout. It's not a city. It's a town, you know. Yeah. Everything revolves around the universities there, which is great. But New York is an entirely different beast from anything in this country. So I think it's important to invest the time and energy, whatever speaks to you, whatever you need. Some people don't need a couple of months of savings. They just need, you know, a dance belt and a tube of chapstick. And off they go. Others are different.
Did you come here with any sort of contract, or were you just like, all right, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to find a place. I'm gonna, like you said, get your bearings. But I know I've talked to so many people who are just like, I didn't want to come here until I had something that was a sure thing. So they were commuting from other cities sometimes. They were like hours away. They would just come here for audition after audition, and they never moved here until they had a show.
Wow. Yeah. No, not for me. Not so for me. I moved when I was ready. I literally woke up and was like, yes, it is time. I moved here, however, and said to myself, I am going to give myself a month. Take a month. Learn your new home. You're here. You made it. Yay. Like, take a month, learn the city, learn the system, learn the subway system, learn how to get around, what you need to do, you know, connect with so many friends who are here already and are so psyched to have you come and now finally join our party here in NYC and, you know, do those things. Don't worry about auditioning. You're okay. Again, this is what I mean by, like, you're okay for money right now. So take the time to get yourself together, because when it's time to hit the pavement, you'll need to be on it. So give yourself that gift. I had earned it. I worked very hard, you know, in school and after, saving my, you know, nickels and such. And I said, don't audition for a month. And about 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from a fellow alum, and he was like, hey, doing a show downtown. We lost our leading lady. I've recommended you. You're going to get a call. And I was like, okay. And I went down to audition. And I remember as I was going, I mean, this friend of mine, fellow alum, is like, he was a senior when I was a freshman. And that is the, like, state of our relationship as friends. He will always be like a senior.
That's how you're frozen emotionally together. Yeah.
I will always be a freshman. And I remember as I was going to this audition, I was like, oh my gosh, please don't embarrass him. He totally recommended you for this. And I had just gotten to the city. So it wasn't like, you know, I had all this other experience of, like, you know, walking into other casting offices and, like, bombing or doing a great job or whatever. This is like probably the first one, if I'm remembering correctly. And I remember thinking, don't embarrass him. Oh my God, you'll just die of shame if you get in there. You're just awful. I was so horrified. I got there. I went in. I sang again. I was asked to read again. And then I was asked to wait outside. And I'm just thinking someone will come out and say, thank you so much. Or we'll, you know, let you know. Hear me now. I go out, I wait, just hoping it's going to pass. Just give me a grade that's good. I don't want him to get the worst feedback. And they came out and said, we would like you to join the company.
Wow.
So about 2 weeks into my move, I had a job. And so I was going to play Mabel in the Pirates of Penzance on the South Street Seaport in the ship Peking, like a pirate show on a ship. docked in the water. Ta-da.
That's so cool.
Yep. Totally.
That's so cool. The I don't know much about the FSU program. Is it more of a focus on acting or singing? Because I feel like the better musical theater actors are the ones who realize that you have to put the effort into acting. You can't just be a great singer, right? You can't just sit there and sing. You have to act the part too.
Who told you that? Who said such a thing? FSU is really grounded. One of the things I loved about it is that I feel like, and I say this all the time because it's 100% true, I feel like I got a conservatory education at a liberal arts university. So I got, like, intense, focused, high-level training that was demanding and demanded the most of its students and of the community that we formed with each other. But also I got a college experience. So if I wanted to tailgate and go to ball games and do things that college students do, it's great. Because ultimately the translation was, you will need to be an artist in the most high level way, the best you can do, but you will need to function in the world. And if you don't have practice at that, it will be snaggy when you leave school. Because you're like, what? The entire world doesn't revolve around our school of theater, dance, and, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're hugely important. But what I have really benefited from, in my opinion, is that I got practice right away at those really important stages. You know, when you leave for school, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, right in there, those like adult, like knife sharpening, tool making years, yep. like getting the foundations together.
Hangover years.
Yeah. You got to really know how to manage all the things that are going to be in your life and are going to be part of your life, the landscape. So that was the experience of Florida State. And yes, it is intense with voice, both speaking and singing, intense with acting, all kinds of acting and genres and dance. Like graduates of FSU are in their bodies. You will dance. You will do it. You may not come with the highest skill set. You will be exponentially sharper and ready to compete when you leave the program. You will do the work, but you'll be ready.
That's so cool because, I mean, so what I was trying to lead into was sort of obvious connection to the fact that you just sort of do everything and do everything really well. So you've got the Broadway credits and you've got the TV credits and something that I didn't even touch on in the bio was concert work.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So right. You've been a guest artist with the New York Pops at Carnegie Hall and jazz at Lincoln Center and the New York City Center and National Symphony in Washington, D.C., the Philadelphia Orchestra, the Toronto Symphony Orchestra. There's like 10 more lines here in my notes here that I can read as orchestra, orchestra, orchestra of every major city all around. So that, and then you throw in the voiceover work and yeah. all of this. It's just, there's everything there. So where do you, I mean, how do you focus all of this? Where do you know, how do you know what you're doing next? Or where do you decide what to do next?
It's actually really easy for me because it all comes under one umbrella, which is when people ask me, what do you do for a living? I say, I'm an actress. Ta-da! Like, that's the answer. It's all storytelling. It's all different expressions, different colors and shapes around the very central point, which is storytelling. I'm just as interested in the storytelling for a Publix commercial that I'm reading for as I am in the storytelling playing, you know, Felicia Farrell in Memphis or Angelica Schuyler. I know that sounds strange, like like I'm trying to equalize those things. I'm not. They're different in terms of like where they land and how you approach them. But ultimately, there is a skill set that centers around expression and the telling of a story, and they rise in all the places. And so I choose what to do next by what interests me. It's a bit of a potion. You know what I mean? I'm always looking for things that interest me. I'm looking for other creatives who are so dynamic and I'm very interested in working with. I'm interested in language. I'm interested in musicality. I'm interested in location. I'm interested in, you know, changing media, you know? It was such a surprise to me. I want to be clear. For example, when I was studying acting at 12 years old and up until, I wanted to be a theater actress. It wasn't like I was like, got to school and was like, I'm going to be a voiceover artist. If you had come to me in my ballet class when I was 18, 19 years old at Florida State University, just sweating and like mad in my ballet class because I'm just like working so hard, and said to me, so here's how it's going to go down. I'm like, that's crazy because none of that exists. Like if you had said to me, you're going to make your Broadway debut in The Color Purple, I'd have been like, that's crazy because it's not a Broadway show, A, number one. I would have like listed the things that are true, but you know, there you go.
Stranger things have happened.
So
for me, I think it's funny that you didn't mention any of the technical stuff because for me, I was like, you need different management, different representation for all of these different genres. So that's what I was saying. I was like, oh, so you're sitting there doing The Color Purple, and then a VO agent for video games walks up.
Like, hello.
Like, hey, I noticed your overly dramatic presentation in this really serious play. Would you like to go do a funny voice for a video game? Like, you have to seek this out, right? Or like, how does that happen?
But here's what. Okay, so I'll tell you my story. So you remember when I told you that my friend recommended me for the job and it was Pirates of Penzance and we were like on the ship in South Street Seaport and we were doing the Pirates. So in the audience, one of those nights was a representative from a commercial agency who works in commercials and, you know, reps talent in that way, but loves the theater and everything. And there he was And there I was. And when the play was over, he said to me, "Hey, I work with commercials and I think we should take a meeting." That was it. I took the meeting. It went extraordinarily well. And I've been a client ever since.
Wow.
And so saying yes to it, being available to it, like there in the first place, his being there, his approaching me, my saying yes, and then being open to what that meeting was and the possibilities there. All of it new. Not in that I didn't know how to talk or I'd never seen a commercial before, but being on the other side of it was new. And what I found is I opened up that tool chest and reached in and was like, how do you score a scene? How do you use these words to your advantage? How do you take direction? And I had a tool for every single thing. And it kept growing and growing and growing.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So that was just right place, right time. It's funny. The last interview I did was Adam Pascal told me that the only reason he got Rent was because he happened to grow up next to Idina Menzel. So she called him and she was like, "We can't cast this one role. Come in and read for this guy, Bernie Telsey, that no one's ever heard of." And then it leads, first audition, first show, leads to his Tony-nominated role.
Like just all of it. All of it. Meanwhile, in one sentence, you just said Idina, Adam, and Bernie. You know what I mean? All of these things have grown.
Right.
You know what I mean? Are like sitting in space now in very, very luscious areas. It's good.
So you never know. I mean, for people listening, like you never know the people in college that you work with. You never know when they're going to call you up after you move to the city and say, "Come audition for my show. We just lost our leading lady and it's going to lead to the rest of your career."
Literally, you know? So that's how it happened for commercials. And then, you know, you get there and you start, I started to discover this entire world of commercial acting and the presentation and what the business of that is. There was never a moment where I thought this doesn't line up with what I'm trying to do. It all made sense.
Do you have a favorite? Do you have like a favorite of, do you ever do too much theater and you're like, "I got to go and tour with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra again," or like, "Oh, I'm tired of these stuffy tuxedos. I got to get back on stage again."
I cut my teeth in the theater. I love the theater. It'll always, always be like the heart and soul. Like I can't imagine going through whole seasons or 2 and 5 year periods where I don't do any plays at all. You know what I mean? That just doesn't seem right to me. Even when I've been, you know, working on 2 TV shows at the same time. Do you know what I mean? I've always had room or made space for it. So I got to be honest with you. There is no favorite. My issue is when I don't get to do everything. I'm being honest. I get a little fussy when I don't, you know, too much time goes by and I haven't, you know, had a chance to, you know, get with the pops and sing something or, you know, it's time to talk about detergent or something on. it's the ability to keep it interesting, keep it nimble. You know, like it's always tossing that ball in the air and it just comes at me in crazy, awesome ways. It's very exciting. I'm never bored ever.
It's
never
so bored. Funny. It doesn't sound like you ever stop. it's funny. You're like, yeah, if you said Color Purple will be your Broadway debut, it'd be like, nah, that's not even a Broadway show. But, you know, now you mentioned TV and whatnot. Like, so Inventing Anna, coming out on Netflix soon. If we were to tell little Montego, like, there's this thing that's called the internet and you're going to be on TV, but it's not TV. It's going to be on everyone's little pockets. You'd be like, what? Like, what is this? But tell us more about, I guess Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and everything are casting movies and TV just like anything else now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's the same, except the delivery is the delivery of the content, the delivery of the whole, the season, the, you know, the world of these plays, quote unquote, are different from what a lot of us grew up with. You know what I mean? I say all the time, and you know, I talk about this with students And with, you know, just sort of gabbing with contemporaries of mine, you know, I say, wow, there, you remember a time when we watched television by appointment? Like if you weren't in front of your television at 8 p.m. on Thursday, you missed it. You missed it. And now that's not how we take in content. That's not how we absorb it. And so being willing as an artist to move with that, is a large undertaking, because there's also, in my opinion, so much more on television, on all of these platforms. There's so much more content now. There's also a lot to choose from, in terms of being a consumer and being available as an actor or actress. There's a lot out there, which I think is wonderful. I think abundance is the only way to go. And I've always felt that way. There's more than enough for all of us. There's more than enough for me and you and all. So the real question is, you know, what are you available to? But some stuff is a no, obviously.
Right. And who are you available for?
Yeah. Because that makes a difference. It does, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to connect with casting directors. I mean, aside from the person you're reading with, which obviously, with sometimes your reader just gives you nothing. So you still have to pull from yourself. But like screen tests and rehearsals, yeah. And whatnot, like you got to pull things out that you didn't expect, or that, you know, you're relying on yourself, but then you've got to make these connections you have to leave your stamp. I want to say it's not quite the right word, but like when you walk out of the room, you still have to leave a part of yourself there so they remember you.
Yeah. Is that how you felt when you were doing the work, or if you've ever been on the other side of the table, is that how you felt? May I ask?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I have done some casting, and I've done a lot of performing, a lot more performing than I have casting. Mm-hmm. And I remember the people that are nice to me when they're not on. I put in air quotes. They come in and they seem genuinely happy to be reading the lines and to be there, mm-hmm. and are just themselves. Because you can tell when someone's nervous. You can tell.
Yeah.
You can tell when they're not really enjoying themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's not somebody you want to put on your stage.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So that they gotta be able to take direction. You gotta be able to work with them. And so there is a bit of interpersonal relationship dynamics that play along with everything. But yeah, I remember, to answer your question, yeah, I remember people who just seem like genuinely good people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even playing evil characters, you still want to be able to work with somebody and have them be a nice person.
Yes. Yes. Life is separate from art. There should be a way to know that you can fully access that truly evil, villainous character, but you will not create chaos, you know, in the theater every night, backstage or at rehearsals or whatever. There right. There needs to be a level of assurance there, a trust of kind of a certain
right.
Thing, right? Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Okay, so there's three standard closing questions that I ask when wrapping up every podcast here. The first one, very simply, is what motivates you? Mm-hmm.
Purpose.
All right. I like it. Full stop. All right. Second question. What advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
Keep working. You will get there. You will get there. You will get there. You're on your way. Just keep doing the work. Keep doing the work.
And then last question. Hardest one, if you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
Oh, Sweeney Todd.
That was a quick answer and by far the most popular answer.
It's just got everything.
All right. Well, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter. My handle is my name, Montego Glover. Same for Facebook, same for Instagram. And of course, my website is montegoglover.com.
And then, of course, look for her on Netflix. Yeah. And then it's actually, we didn't even talk about this, but like CBS, the shows, the episodics, they are ongoing and record for months and months and months. Yeah. And then you're recording for Netflix and it's just, they release it all at once. So they have to record all at once. So that project is done. Is there a stuff in the can that we'll see you in soon too as well that's already been recorded?
There's stuff that you will see me in, some of it done, some of it not. Yes. The answer is yes.
All right. Yeah. Well, we will we'll have you back on again for the future stuff. All right. You can find more of me at thetheaterpodcast.com. Show your support at thetheaterpodcast.com/Patreon. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at @theater_podcast and Facebook/officialtheaterpodcast. Please leave a rating, leave a review, tell your friend. This is edited by Matthew Hendershot. Thank you to Jukebox the Ghost for the intro and outro music. And Montego, thank you most of all. I have really, really enjoyed this chat.
Oh, so glad. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.